When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Donald Trump launches his 2024 presidential bid.
The advantage for him is he's out there alone. He may potentially scare off some rivals, but we don't expect that he's going to have this all to himself. There's a number of other contenders who are most likely to jump in this race.
Plus, NATO ambassadors hold an emergency meeting on the missile that hit Polish territory yesterday. And wealthy nations commit billions to help Indonesia ditch coal. But will it work? It's Wednesday, November 16th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. A missile that hit Poland yesterday, killing two people, was likely from a Ukrainian air defense system, according to two senior Western officials briefed on preliminary U.S. assessments. Poland is continuing its own investigation of the explosion, which occurred amid a Russian barrage across Ukraine. The initial findings are being discussed today at an emergency meeting at the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, where ambassadors from its 30 members will review intelligence and consider their options. Wall Street Journal Brussels Bureau Chief Dan Michaels has the latest.
It doesn't seem like a situation yet where NATO needs to defend itself. If it was a tragic mistake of Ukraine fired a missile that erred and went into Poland, probably everyone will point the finger at Russia because Ukraine would have been defending itself against Russia. But it doesn't seem like at this point that this is a situation for NATO to step in and declare its sort of all for one status.
Donald Trump formally launched his 2024 presidential campaign last night. Speaking at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida, Trump touted his record as president, particularly on the economy, and painted a bleak picture of the 2 years of the Biden presidency.
Under our leadership, we were a great and glorious nation, something you haven't heard for quite a long period of time. We were a strong nation, and importantly, we were a free nation. But now we are a nation in decline. We are a failing nation.
We'll have more on Trump's campaign launch later in the show. The UK's annual rate of inflation has risen to a fresh 41-year high. According to the UK's Office of National Statistics, October consumer prices were 11.1% higher than a year ago and the highest since October 1981. However, a government price cap on energy and a looming recession mean that any further inflation increases in the coming months are likely to be more modest. NASA successfully launched the world's most powerful rocket early this morning, a key test run in the agency's ambitions to return to the moon. No astronauts were on board for the practice mission. The costly rocket has been in the works for more than a decade, with contractors behind it struggling at times with delays and production challenges. And in other market news today, Chinese social media and video game giant Tencent's revenue has declined for a second consecutive quarter, as China's slowing economy dented video game user spending and marketing budgets of digital advertisers. Meanwhile, Elon Musk is slated to take the stand today in a shareholder lawsuit over his multi-billion-dollar compensation package at Tesla. The U.S. Commerce Department is set to release October retail sales figures today, while chipmaker Nvidia, insurer Progressive, and retailers Target, TJX, and Lowe's are set to headline another day of quarterly earnings reports. Wealthy countries gathered at this week's meeting of the G20 nations in Indonesia have agreed to spend $20 billion to steer Indonesia, the world's largest coal exporter, toward renewables as a part of broader efforts to help emerging economies to decarbonize. Wall Street Journal climate change reporter Ed Ballard has been following this week's announcement, and he joins us now with the details. Ed, thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be here with you.
So Ed, tell us a bit about how this deal works exactly.
So this money is primarily going to be used to pay for Indonesia's energy transition. So it's going to be invested in low carbon energy like wind and solar, with the objective that about a third of Indonesia's power generation is renewable by 2030. And that would basically mean sort of doubling the current rate of deployment for what has been a kind of laggard on this front.
There's a lot of money attached to this. I'm curious, who exactly is paying for this and how?
Yeah, so half the money, about $10 billion over 3 to 5 years, is going to come from governments. So the US and Japan, the European Union, Canada, the UK, other countries. And that will be a mix of what's called concessional funding, so low-cost loans and some grants as well. And the other half is going to come from private financial institutions. So several banks have put their names to this plan, including Citi, Bank of America, HSBC, and other members of the large climate finance group that was set up last year by the former central banker Mark Carney.
Is the thinking that this amount being offered is adequate enough to be effective at achieving its goals?
It's definitely not on its own going to remake Indonesia's economy so that it runs without fossil fuels. And in fact, the investment required in the coming decades would probably be in the trillions of dollars. So I think this $20 billion, it's more about sort of kickstarting this process and showing investors that this is an opportunity that will be a very attractive place to put their money in the next years.
And Ed, the question many people are probably asking themselves while listening to this, is this deal ultimately going to work?
That's the really big question. And I think definitely a lot of investors see huge opportunity in investing in renewable energy and wind and solar in Indonesia. So that's undeniably a tailwind. But on the other hand, Indonesia's economy is set up to run on coal. And the whole direction of travel for Indonesia's economy needs to be kind of re-engineered. And that's a really big challenge. And one expert said to me that if this concept can work in Indonesia, it can work anywhere. So this really is a great test case for the whole idea of engineering the accelerated decline of coal.
That was Wall Street Journal climate change reporter Ed Ballard, who produces the WSJ Climate and Energy Newsletter. You can subscribe to it at wsj.com/newsletters. Ed, thank you so much.
Thanks, Luke.
Coming up, we'll get an update from Palm Beach, Florida, after Donald Trump launched his 2024 presidential campaign there last night. That's after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Donald Trump launched his third consecutive White House bid last night, aiming to reaffirm his position as the Republican standard bearer, despite disappointing midterm election results that have led some party leaders to suggest the polarizing former president step aside. Wall Street Journal political reporter Alex Leary was at the campaign launch at Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort, and he joins us now from Palm Beach, Florida, with the latest. Alex, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
So paint a picture for us of what we saw last night at Mar-a-Lago.
Well, Donald Trump announced that he's running for a third consecutive time. He had a pretty large crowd on hand, a lot of media. He seemed quite happy with that, despite his sort of stereotypical attacks on the fake news. He was really quite pleased to see the turnout of media. Had hundreds of people there, his supporters, some of his most ardent supporters there to sort of cheer him on. This is no surprise at all that he was going to do this. He's been telegraphing it for months now, and it was sort of the culmination of that, and he's been itching to get into this race.
Did we get a sense of the issues that might be at the core of this next campaign?
In his speech, he talked a lot about sort of what he did in the White House before, but towards the end of this speech, he sort of outlined an agenda for his next term if he were to win. It looks a lot like he campaigned on before. That is more border wall, border security. He talked about more oil independence for the U.S., more oil production domestically. He talked about an all-out campaign to end the U.S. reliance on China, bringing more manufacturing back. So a lot of the themes we've heard before from Donald Trump, he says he wants to kind of continue those policies going forward.
What are the benefits for Trump of making this announcement now, pretty early in this upcoming election cycle, to say the least?
Yeah, it's very early. The advantage for him is he's out there alone. He sort of captivated the audience, and you know, it's just Donald Trump right now, and that's what he wanted. He may potentially scare off some rivals, but we don't expect that he's going to have this all to himself. Of course, there's a lot of talk about Ron DeSantis as the Florida governor, but there's a number of other contenders who are most likely to jump in this race. The Trump campaign would like to see actually a larger field. They don't want it to just be like, say, Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. A larger field they feel like is more advantageous to him because he does have a very loyal support of voters out there, and they figured that would carry him through as it did in 2016.
Do they see maybe a fundraising advantage too about getting in early?
Donald Trump has had a very successful kind of small dollar fundraising efforts since he left office, and he certainly will have that alone for could be months before anybody else of any sort of stature jumps in and could draw some money. Now, again, Ron DeSantis is one of those people. There's a lot of big donors that like what Ron DeSantis offers, and they have openly gravitated towards him. So that's something that certainly the Trump campaign is going to be looking over their shoulder at.
You are covering Trump and DeSantis for the Wall Street Journal. Do you have a sense of how long Trump will have the field all to himself? Is there thinking in the DeSantis camp if he's going to run, and if so, when he might get in?
There's definitely thinking he's going to run. He hasn't made a final decision, but there's a lot of people around him, including his wife, that feel like this is a great moment for him. The Florida legislature has a regular session that ends in early May, and the people I've talked to say that Governor DeSantis would not make a decision to enter the race until after that's over. He's got an agenda that he wants to sort of plow through with the legislature, and most likely will get a lot what he wants, so he would come out of that session looking pretty formidable.
Trump is also facing a number of legal investigations, including a criminal probe by the Justice Department. Does getting back into campaigning in any way change that?
Yeah, there is some thinking that it complicates some of these investigations. I mean, certainly, as you just referred to, the Mar-a-Lago document case, that's going to put the Department of Justice in an awkward spot to be essentially investigating one of President Biden's declared rivals. So it's going to be a challenge for the Justice Department. My colleagues have reported that they're working pretty fast to close up that case. Donald Trump tonight referred to that. He likes to play the victim in this. It rallies his supporters to rail against the FBI and the Justice Department, and in fact, the National Archives, which this all started over, but presidential records that really belong to the government, not him.
And finally, Alex, have we seen any reactions yet to Trump's announcement so far?
Yeah, President Biden was overseas, and reporters asked him about it, and he was quite dismissive of the notion. President Biden, however, is eager to see Donald Trump emerge as the potential nominee here. The White House thinks that he can beat him a second time, that the country is sort of fatigued by Donald Trump, and that's one of the big reasons why Joe Biden won in 2020. A number of Republicans are sort of openly, there's this debate now about Trump or not Trump in the GOP, like who should carry the flag forward. That's something that we hadn't seen as much vocal sort of opposition to Trump from fellow Republicans because of the sort of disappointing midterm elections they had. So that's another challenge for Donald Trump, and it will invite others, including Ron DeSantis, Mike Pence, and potentially other candidates to sort of step up, thinking that he is not the king of the party as he has been for a number of years.
That was Wall Street Journal political reporter Alex Leary joining us from Palm Beach, Florida. Alex, thank you.
Sure thing.
And finally, investors are beginning to cool on funding startups involved in developing the so-called Internet of Things for retailers. We're not talking here about our smart home gadgets, but rather smart technology that monitors essential industry data like store occupancy or transportation systems. According to PitchBook, total venture capital funding for startups developing Internet of Things tech for retailers is on pace to drop more than 65% this year. And Wall Street Journal reporter Angus Lowden explains why that funding is down, even as IoT technology remains vital to how retailers do business.
Now that COVID restrictions have eased and in some cases just dropped entirely, I think a lot of investors are saying, well, look, this isn't going to be a hot spot the way it was in the last few years. And with the economy kind of teetering on recession, they figure that most stores are going to be focusing somewhere else. They're happy with the tools they have right now. In the meantime, they're not going to make big investments in this stuff going forward for the next year or so. So they've kind of shifted their focus to other areas. And the concern there, obviously, is that these startups are going to be choked of cash to develop the next generation of these tools.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.